The headlines in a tit-for-tat. Move: Iran blacklists dozens of British and EU-related individuals. A UN report says more than 11,000 children have been killed or maimed during nearly 8 years of a Saudi-led war. And U.S. President Joe Biden reiterates Washington's strong support for Kiev in the war with Russia. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran slapped sanctions on a number of EU and UK individuals and entities over their support for what the foreign ministry called acts of terror and rioting in the Islamic Republic. The ministry said the measures target 17 individuals and entities in Britain, as well as 15 others in the European Union. They were blacklisted for supporting terrorist groups and inciting terrorism, violence, and hatred in Iran. The ministry said those acts fuel the recent riots and violations of the rights of Iranian people. The sanctions include visa bans and asset freezes. Tehran had earlier imposed similar restrictions on other British and European individuals and entities. The EU and the UK have imposed several rounds of sanctions on Iran for alleged crackdown on protests and recent incidents. Tehran rejects these accusations, saying it has been dealing with rioters. Tehran once again strongly condemns the decision by the European satellite operator Eutelsat to take the Iranian news channel Press TV off air. A foreign ministry spokesman says that the move is politically motivated and is aimed at preventing the voice of Iranian people from being heard. Nasser Kanani also said Europeans preach others on freedom of expression and the free flow of information, but move to block Press TV despite its compliance with international rules. He also slammed European countries for hosting TV channels that foment violence and terrorism in Iran. Eutelsat has warned Press TV that it will take the broadcaster off air. Press TV has strongly condemned the decision. The United Nations says more than 11,000 children have been killed or maimed in the Saudi-led war on Yemen. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says hundreds of thousands of children also remain at risk for the death and starvation that is preventable. And according to the agency, around 2.2 million Yemeni children are acutely malnourished. One quarter of them are aged under five. Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a war on Yemen in 2015. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have died ever since, either as a result of war or indirectly through unsafe drinking water, disease outbreaks, hunger, and other impacts. The UN brokered truce this year lasted for 6 months until October, but the warring sides then failed to agree on an extension. International relations professor Jamal Hakim says the West just does not care about the toll of the war on Yemen.
This is not the first time they do that, actually. If we take the precedence of Iraq, when Iraq was put under sanctions for nearly 12 years and 500,000 children were affected and died of these harsh measures, when the former Secretary of State of the United States, Madeleine Albright, was asked about that, she said actually that it was a mere collateral damage. So this has been the case in many other situations. Whenever the war actually was in favor of the Western geopolitical agenda, i.e. the United States, UK, France, and other Western powers. So the case in Yemen is not new and unique because we've been witnessing the West doing the same in Iraq, doing the same in Afghanistan, elsewhere in Africa, for example, without being liable to any penalty, to any punishment, or to any criticism.
Israeli atrocities against Palestinians know no bounds. The regime forces have killed one more Palestinian teenager in the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, a 16-year-old girl was shot dead during an Israeli raid in the eastern neighborhood of Jenin. The raid also left three injuries. Jenin has been a focal point of Israeli violence against Palestinians in recent months. The regime has also intensified its crackdown on Palestinians across the occupied territories. So far this year, the Israeli military attacks have taken the lives of around 220 Palestinians in the West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. Islamabad says heavy gunfire and artillery shelling by Afghan forces has left at least six civilians dead across the border in Pakistan. The Pakistani army said that it retaliated a border crossing attack on the western Balochistan province. Afghan officials say that the incident was accidental and the situation has now returned to normal. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi tells us more.
This was the attack which has targeted the civilian in Pakistan. Especially, this is the porous border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And the reports confirmed that six people have lost their lives, while 17 other was wounded in this attack. And there was an emergency declared in all the hospitals in southwestern Balochistan province, while the rescue teams took the wounded persons to the hospitals, where many of them are said to be in critical condition. This attack was carried out by Afghan border forces, and the Pakistan military says that the Afghan forces used heavy machine guns and artillery, and they fired mortar shells on the civilians in Pakistan. This was the second attack in the last 10 days. We have witnessed that a Pakistani High Commission, the Pakistani head of mission in Kabul came under attack in Pakistani embassy, and Pakistan lodged a protest in front of Afghan government and asked the Taliban that to stop such attacks and to provide the security to the officials who are working in the embassy, as well as the civilians who are living inside Afghanistan.
The United Nations mission in Afghanistan is urging the Taliban government to put an end to violations of human rights under their rule. The mission issued the call in a statement marking Human Rights Day. It said all restrictions imposed on the rights of Afghans should be removed. Rahmatullah Baghwan reports.
The United Nations assistance mission in Afghanistan has called on the Taliban to safeguard the basic rights of Afghans, especially those of women and girls. The mission said Taliban's edicts and orders in many cases have violated or impinged on the basic rights and freedoms of the population.
The United Nations in Afghanistan is urging the de facto authorities to stop restricting the basic rights of Afghans, especially those of women and girls, because those who govern have an immense responsibility as duty bearers to every woman, man, girl, and boy.
In reaction, the Taliban deputy spokesman said the so-called Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan has been committed to ensuring the rights of all Afghans. Bilal Karimi also dismissed the UN mission's stance as unreasonable.
We are committed to upholding human rights on the principles of Islamic law, but the statements published by foreigners can have two reasons. Either they are not aware of our culture and Islamic society, or they neglect our Afghan and Islamic values for political motivations. However, they literally don't care about human rights, but they have problems with Islam and implementation of Islamic orders. Such remarks by them are unjustifiable. Actually, our people did not fight invaders for decades to see Western patterns being practiced in their society.
Human rights activists say the Taliban need to be more flexible and supportive when it comes to the human rights of the Afghan people.
Of course, Afghans are Muslims and have their own culture, but the Taliban should not force people to practice religion according to their point of view. The Taliban are depriving the people of their very fundamental rights. Most of their orders on women are against the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, to which Afghanistan was a signatory.
Serious violations of the rights of women and girls by the Taliban, including the right to education, have added insult to injury caused by the U.S. sanctions on Afghanistan and their impact on the human rights situation in the country. The global community has so far refused to recognize the Taliban government in Afghanistan. Upholding human rights by the de facto administration is mentioned as one of the conditions for the recognition. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
U.S. President Joe Biden reiterates his country's strong support for Kiev in the Ukraine war. Biden says Washington is focused on boosting Ukraine's air defenses as Russia pushes with airstrikes on the country's energy infrastructure. He made the comments in a phone call with a Ukrainian counterpart, Volodymyr Zelensky. The Ukrainian president said they also discussed further defense cooperation and protection of his country's energy sector. The U.S. and its Western allies have already announced billions of dollars in military aid to Ukraine. Russia, however, says a continued supply of Western weapons to Kiev will only prolong the war. We were earlier joined by a political analyst, Marcus Papadopoulos, and asked for his take on the new pledge by the U.S. to give military support to Ukraine.
The Western ruling elites, instead of seeking a political settlement to end the fighting in Ukraine and to end the suffering of the population there, are continuing to send vast amounts of weaponry to the Ukrainian government, which will only prolong the war. And it should also be said that no matter what kind of weaponry the West sends to the Ukrainian government, this will not alter what will be the eventual outcome of the war, namely a Russian victory. Because when I say, as I have said since the 24th of February of this year, that Russia is winning the war, I mean in this way. Firstly, that Russia has captured a very substantial part of Ukraine. And secondly, the Russians, almost from day one, have been waging a war of attrition against the Ukrainian armed forces, specifically by using their artillery. Now, historically speaking, Russian artillery is preeminent in the world. And as a result of this war of attrition, the Ukrainian armed forces have incurred colossal casualties.
Russia says Europe's attempts to put an end to its reliance on Russian gas are, quote, absurd and frenzied. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says Europe has shifted to natural gas imports from the United States in a bid to overcome its dependency on Russian gas. But according to Peskov, the dependency has not ended as the continent is now leaning on American LNG. The remarks come as the European Union plans to hold an emergency meeting on Tuesday to arrive at an agreement on imposing a price cap on natural gas. Most of the bloc's members are struggling with energy shortages and fuel price hikes caused by the repercussions of the Ukraine war. Nurses will take strike action in Britain on Thursday for the first time in 106 years. Nearly 100,000 members of the Royal College of Nursing will be walking out nationwide after the government rejected their pay demands. The work stoppage will reduce services to Christmas staffing levels. The union wants to pay rise significantly above the inflation rate, which has surged to a 41-year high. The government, however, says that would be unaffordable. Britain has been witnessing back-to-back strikes across different sectors over the past months. The situation has been triggered by the inflation and surging energy prices that came on the heels of Western sanctions on Russia over the war in Ukraine. And Pakistan's Shia Muslims are holding events and ceremonies to mark the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Nasser Kazmi reports.
Like other parts of the Muslim world, Islam's faithful followers in Pakistan also observed the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, the revered daughter of Prophet Muhammad. People from all walks of life attended morning ceremonies in different cities and towns across the country to pay tribute to Hazrat Fatima Zahra, who is also the wife of the first Shia Imam, Ali ibn Abi Talib. The morning ceremonies included reciting verses from the Holy Quran, congregational prayers, and lectures on the life and sacrifices of the daughter of Islam's last prophet. While highlighting the valuable contributions of Islam's greatest lady, religious scholars said Fatima Zahra is one of the five holy ladies in the history of the world and has a very high position in Islam.
When we say that Fatima Zahra is a role model, we do not mean that this is the only limited to a few areas of her life. This discussion is endless, and we can never stop discussing the greatness of her personality.
Fatima Zahra, salamullah alayha.
Fatima Zahra is a shining example not only for women, but every Muslim. She cemented the guidance and teaching which Islam brought and showed us that they are possible to implement in our daily lives.
Some mourners also gave away food to the people in need to mark the occasion. They say that helping others in need is the lesson given to all Muslims by the Prophet Muhammad and his household. Iran, Iraq, and Lebanon are among the other Muslim countries marking the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra.
While honoring her immense sacrifices and services in the path of Islam, participants in the ceremonies described Fatima Zahra as the best role model, not only for the Muslims, but for the followers of all religions. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
In early 2022, FTX, a crypto exchange, was valued at $32 billion and a household name. It took fewer than 8 days for Sam Bankman-Fried to go from being nicknamed the King of Crypto to his company filing for bankruptcy. Now there are speculations of not only money laundering, but the failed crypto exchange took in millions in donations for Ukraine, but allegedly rerouting the sums back to U.S. politicians. Conspiracy theory? That's what we want to find out in this edition of Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, the FTX fall, money laundering operation, millions in donations for Ukraine, crypto donations went to Kiev's war effort. That's what was reported. Next, crypto's destination. Now, it's supposed to go to Ukraine's National Bank, but some of that went to U.S. political donations. The FTX CEO donated roughly $38 million, maybe a little bit more, to the Democratic Party. And then we will take a look at FTX regulation scheme. That's right, this thing is pretty widespread, where FTX spent millions lobbying to shape crypto regulations. Now keep in mind, Democrats are responsible for overseeing the Trade Commission.
Since the war in Ukraine began in February 2022, Western nations and their politicians and billionaires began to rally behind Kyiv. Apart from weapons, they began to offer donations to officials in Kyiv to keep the government functioning. But it has now turned out that some of those donations were not so innocent. Notorious cryptocurrency exchange FTX and its founder Samuel Bankman-Fried has filed for bankruptcy. Its company was once valued at $32 billion, and its owner had a net worth estimated at more than $15 billion as of late October. His company began to fall apart last month. It has now emerged that his company functioned as the central clearinghouse for all crypto donations to Kyiv's war effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that gets to the point that this can be a great thing for the world. I think it can also be a really messy thing. But I think that, that at its core, you know, we've seen millions of dollars go through, the systems we've given. I think something close to a million ourselves as well to support, humanitarian aid and drugs in Ukraine. And, I think when you think about what it would take to get, to get funds both to the government there, where we do have a relationship with the Ukrainian government for raising capital for them using cryptocurrencies.
But the money sent to Ukraine by Democratic politicians in the U.S. would see their money come back in the form of donations through FTX. More simple terms, the company was transferring money to Ukraine and then laundering money back from Ukraine to the Democratic Party. As an example, other parties, such as the Republicans, were also noted in this.
All right, time to find out what is being posted on this. As we speak, there's been a social media storm on FTX and its bankruptcy. So let's get going. First up, like we have been saying for months, the Ukraine war is nothing but a money laundering scheme funded by U.S. taxpayers. This particular view obviously seems to hit it right on. Next, how else are they supposed to get U.S. tax money back into their pockets? That's what we've been saying in this program, and we would elaborate more on that a little later. Next post, well, they would be absolutely spot on. It's a proxy war, with the only winner being the military-industrial complex. They are earning a fortune of our taxpayers' money and giving massive donations to the Democrats, DNC, through FTX and others. Next, great question, is Washington still our ally? EU accusing U.S. of profiteering from Ukraine war through sales of guns and gas and threatening trade war, as top diplomats moan Biden's green subsidies means European businesses are relocating to the U.S. What we did was we further expanded on this. As soon as the Ukraine war started, President Zelensky partnered with FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried for crypto donations. It posed this question, is this greed or is this corruption? Well, let's take a look at this a little bit further in terms of this partnering with FTX. Everstake to launch new crypto donation website. FTX is converting crypto contributions to Ukraine's war effort into fiat for deposit at the National Bank of Ukraine. The Ukrainian government launched a new crypto donations website, streamlining its multi-million dollar effort to turn Bitcoin into bullets, bandages, and other war material. Aid for Ukraine, which has the backing of crypto exchange FTX, staking platform Everstake, and Ukraine's Kuna exchange, will route donated crypto to the National Bank of Ukraine. The country's collective efforts have already raised some $48 million in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. Other estimates are placing that amount closer to $100 million. All right, so those posts we picked because they kind of fall in line in terms of some of the things that we're assuming at this point about this fallout from FTX and, of course, the different connections it has from money laundering to U.S. political systems. But let's find out what our guests think about this. First up is Vijay Varghese. Now, he's a managing partner at Amparo and Company. It's a global liquidity provider and also market for precious metals, market maker, that is, for precious metals and digital assets. Vijay Varghese, welcome to Economic Divide. FTX was valued at one point $32 billion. It was a household name. And then you have this Sam Bankman-Fried becoming an official billionaire. thanks to obviously his secondary and more high-profile business, which was FTX. Now, the crypto exchange grew to be the second largest in the world. He was estimated to be worth $16.7 billion, but in 8 days, the firm collapsed. How could that happen in such a short amount of time?
The way it happens is this. The way FTX was structured, the way it was built, it was designed by its own inception to be something other than a quote-unquote crypto exchange. Its setup is very similar to what you find not in a stock exchange or a stock market or an actual physical crypto exchange, but something you'd see similar to an Enron. In fact, when experts have taken apart FTX's corporate layout, they've seen over 70-plus entities that we know of, and possibly even more, that was within its corporate structure. And you only get a structure like that if your whole design was to money launder. Your whole design was to move money, steal funds, mix funds. Nothing good comes out of a structure like that. That's number one. And number two, a 28-year-old kid out of college, there's no way in hell a kid like that could come up with a structure like that. This was created for him. FTX is a creation of very, very nefarious private interests that are right here in the United States.
All right. Thank you for that. We're going to throw that point to our next guest and see what he thinks. Craig Holman is serves as Public Citizens. He's a Capitol Hill lobbyist on ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance rules. And also he's an expert on campaign finance. Craig Holman, welcome to Economic Divide. All right. Now, there are charges against FTX when it comes to the failed crypto exchange that it was a money laundering operation. It took in millions of dollars, if not more, in donations for Ukraine, but allegedly it rerouted some of these sums back to U.S. politicians. That's a very severe charge. Now, in terms of the Democratic Party, the second largest donor was Sam Bankman-Fried, pouring in some roughly about $40 million into Canada's coffers in 2022 alone. Do you see that? Do you agree with that?
Well, one part of that story is true. I mean, Bankman had laundered actually even more. Personally, he gave about $40 million to Democratic lawmakers to try to avoid regulation of the industry. And then his co-conspirator, Ryan Salami, gave about $23 million in campaign contributions to Republican lawmakers. All in all, the cryptocurrency industry has, in just the last 2 years, has literally increased their amount of campaign contributions to American lawmakers by almost fivefold, and that was all designed to try to prevent Congress from coming out with a strong regulatory scheme.
The InfoNews section of the program is here. That's where we take a look at some other news from around the world with an economic flavor. First up, we're going to take a look at what's called bypassing SWIFT. SWIFT is a financial system in which Russia and China have plans to bypass it. Now, these trading partners have been boosting transactions in national currencies. We've been telling you about that all along here at Economic Divide, pretty much. The Russian Deputy Prime Minister actually has said, quote, in gas contracts, we are already switching to settlements in national currencies. So there you have that aspect of it. Which is happening in rubles and in yuan, Russian ruble and then the Chinese yuan, and that's happening on a parity basis. He then added supplies of oil and oil products, as well as coal, are also being switched to payments in national currencies. Just a side note here, Russian price cap on its oil was actually approved by the EU, something that Russia has outright denied. So we have to wait and see how that's going to affect the way that transactions are happening when it comes to Russian oil. All right, next up, we're going to take a look at protests that are happening at Amazon. You've heard of Amazon, I'm sure. They have staged walkouts, and this came on Black Friday, in which it was called Black Friday Employees. And what they did, these protests happened across the globe, and they demanded Amazon to naturally pay better wages and to improve their working conditions. This has been going on for quite some time, actually. Now, these protests happened from Germany and France to the U.S., from India to Japan and the United Kingdom. Shows how vast it is, where Amazon's employees downed their tools and joined marches for that Black Friday. All right, EU gas purchases, I just mentioned the EU, and since in terms of insider EU gas purchases, the European Union has spent actually $13 billion on Russian LNG this year. Go figure, how is that possible if they're being actually sanctioned? Now, that's five times more than in 2021, in which the highest demand came from Belgium and from France. Now, the surge in LNG imports this year shows the difficulty in punishing Russia for its special military operation in Ukraine. I wonder if Belgium and France actually knew that there was going to be a cap on the Russian oil, and they were the ones who actually have spent the most buying it. Anyways, taking a look at this particular piece of news, this is very important in terms of a split between the U.S. and France. The French president has warned that subsidies paid to U.S. companies under a vast green energy plan may split the West as a whole. He further added that U.S. industrial subsidies are, quote, super aggressive against French and European competitors. Trade tensions clouded his high-profile state visit to the U.S., which he paid a visit to the U.S. just very recently.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
We've reached a segment of the program called the In-Depth Section, where we will look at the relationship between FTX, Ukraine, the United States, and in particular, the Democratic Party, and in turn, FTX contributions. Let's first look at the timeline of events that are important in maybe answering any ambiguities there. First, in September 2021, Ukraine formally legalized crypto. Then comes February 2022. Russia's special military operation in Ukraine began. And then we're taking a look at February 26. Kuna, which is Ukraine's largest crypto exchange, receives crypto for the war in the same month. Now, this crypto exchange is what it received was called a war effort donation. Next up, we take a look at a month later from that date, in March, Kuna's collaboration with FTX began. It said that it worked with FTX to convert cryptocurrency donations into Ukraine's government-issued currency. Now, as to the amount of the money that flowed in, officially this is what was reported, close to $100 million in crypto donations. Now, the crypto fund for Ukraine, run by Michael Chobanyan, he's the founder of the Ukrainian crypto exchange Kuna, accounted for 60% of all the donations. In case you were wondering why crypto, because crypto donations allowed Kyiv to obtain funding instantly and then deposited them in the National Bank of Ukraine. Now, FTX's connection to the U.S. political parties. FTX's CEO, Bankman-Fried, has become a major Democratic donor. FEC records showed that he made significant donations to Democratic candidates and PACs, including a $27 million donation to the Protect Our Future PAC, which supports mostly Democratic candidates. However, he has also made contributions to some Republican candidates. Now, maybe this diagram can put things into perspective, titled U.S. Tax Dollars at Work. Money came from FTX in the form of donations to the Democratic Party and PACs. The party itself will then obviously back Biden. Then Biden gives the U.S. tax dollars in the form of military and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Then Ukraine uses the U.S. aid to partner with FTX. Now, the parts that's most concerning, all of them, frankly, but the U.S. military and humanitarian assistance. The U.S. has given billions of dollars to Ukraine. Don't forget that. And then finally, when it came to the 2022 U.S. midterms, let's take a look at who were the largest donors. Now, in this case, since our focus is on Sam Bankman-Friedman, he was the number two donor. You can see over here, George Soros came in at number one at $129 million. All right, in case you didn't get that flowchart or anything that we just talked about, let me reintroduce our guest. Vijay Varghese, managing partner at Empower & Company, rejoins us to tell us what he can. Well, a question to you. First of all, welcome back. A question to you, Vijay, is the news that Ukraine accepted donations towards its military defense against Russia via digital currencies. The first question that comes to mind is, why is it accepting digital currencies in the first place? I mean, if you want to take a look at the amount of money that the U.S. is contributing to this war, it's billions of dollars. And maybe that is one of the reasons. What do you think? What is the reason for that?
Oh, yeah. It's a great question. And I'll tell you right now, if this was simply a war of attrition with Russia, and part of it is, okay, there's many layers to this whole Ukraine thing. But when you just look at why, just the question is why digital currency payments were used in Ukraine, right at the same time where the U.S. is sending billions of dollars to Ukraine, and then all of a sudden, left and right, many, many brand new Ukrainian exchanges, cryptocurrency exchanges were popping up. The answer is really simple. If you want a fast and efficient way to covertly fund various groups that are in Ukraine, and we know that the Azov Brigade, the Banderistas, the Stepan Bandera, those who follow this Nazi ideology that's so prevalent within the Ukrainian power structure, if you want to fund some of those people of the most ill repute, this is a great way to do it. It allows you to fund very quickly. It allows you to get your money, get your capital into whatever dark, nefarious project you want to get into, whatever missions you want to run. And then it also covers you from any sort of congressional oversight.
I think the key word the phrase was congressional oversight that our guest Vijay said there. Let's see what Craig Holman thinks. He serves as a public citizen's Capitol Hill lobbyist on ethics, lobbying, and campaign finance rules. Welcome back. This deal with the cryptocurrencies being accepted from Ukraine, coming through anonymous donors, really, is something that is very much under question here in terms of what I'm asking you, because we don't quite understand why that is. Why is Ukraine receiving it via cryptocurrency? Why is the U.S. Actually okay with sending it that way when it's billions of dollars that we're talking about here?
Well, you know, I am not a believer in the whole cryptocurrency industry. So I would advise everyone to stay away from cryptocurrency. But what was going on, there was a cryptocurrency startup company in Ukraine called EverStake, and it was their idea to try to pull in some more money from foreign sources to help pay for the war effort. And they did pull in roughly about $60 million, according to records, to pay for the war effort. So they were just trying to come up with other means of getting investments that they could use to buy helmets and other things to, you know, to help defend themselves against Russia.
Back in March, the FTX launched crypto donation platform Aid for Ukraine. Practically, it set itself up as a central clearinghouse for all cryptocurrency donations to Kiev. But the company funneled at least some of that money back to the U.S. through political donations. Bankman-Fried was once one of the most important donors to the Democratic Party for the midterm elections. He poured nearly $38 million into candidates' campaigns in 2022.
Oh, yes. Her staffers have been talking to a lot of folks in the industry, trying to figure out what was really going on. And in fact, actually, there one of them was very, very interested in the question, how did FTX get so big so fast? And those of us in the industry who were watching what was going on and frankly were appalled by some of the behavior that was taking place there, we knew what was going on. And again, a lot of this has already been reported to law enforcement and it's starting to come out. And I expect there will be more that does come out. So yes, they've been watching this. And they've been on to the right questions, I think. And let's see now whether there's follow through in Washington. At this point, who knows?
In March of this year, the government of Ukraine passed a law that creates a legal framework for the cryptocurrency industry in the country. It allowed banks to open accounts for crypto companies. According to reports, the Ukrainian government had already received over $60 million in crypto donations as of March. That money has not been updated since then. There are no reliable information about the exact amount of money Kiev has received in cryptocurrency. But the
reasons for Ukraine's push towards cryptocurrency were under question, especially at a time when Kiev is already receiving huge sums of money from Western nations. Ukrainian officials have not provided any detailed and reliable reports on spending. Ukraine is said to have spent 75% of the money it raised through cryptocurrencies. But what happened to the remaining funds cannot be unambiguously explained. Critics say the lack of full-fledged reporting has cast doubts on the proper use of the service.
Bitcoin's use in military operations has been on the rise since the Ukrainian army received Bitcoin donations. According to new statistics from blockchain analytics startup Elliptic, within a 12-hour period, there was approximately $400,000 in Bitcoin contributed to Comeback Alive, a Ukrainian nonprofit group that supports the armed forces. Elliptic reported that the crypto donations reached hundreds of thousands of dollars and has been poured into Ukrainian NGOs and volunteer organizations attempting to counter Russian military operations. So, how does Bitcoin benefit from the military operations? Volunteer groups have historically supplemented the work of Ukraine's military by providing additional resources and manpower. For instance, when the former pro-Russian Ukrainian president Viktor Yanukovych was deposed in 2014, volunteers stepped up to assist protesters. In order to provide support, these groups often accept funding from private donations via bank transfers or payment applications. However, cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin has grown in popularity since it allows users to avoid financial institutions that may prohibit transfers to Ukraine. The volunteer groups and non-governmental organizations such as Comeback Alive, which has accepted cryptocurrency since 2018, have used the Bitcoin for a number of purposes. These include buying military weapons, medical supplies, training services, and drones for the Ukrainian army, as well as supporting the development of a facial recognition device intended to identify whether someone is a Russian soldier or a spy. Cryptocurrency fundraising is becoming an increasingly important component of current conflicts all around the world. One of the appeals is that the money cannot be traced to the sender. This could even include governments and their officials who may want to send funds in order to remain anonymous. This puts into question the goal of the governments, which in the case of the U.S. could be to start a color revolution like it did in Ukraine. According to an MIT researcher, Jason Lowery, who is an astronautical engineer in the U.S. Space Force, Bitcoin can play a critical role in national security, and the U.S. should acquire Bitcoin to counter the impact of other nations potentially seeking to wean themselves off U.S. dollar reliance. Okay, that's the end of this segment of the program.
In conclusion, there are two important issues here. First, FTX being a money laundering operation, you know, moving money around in Ponzi scheme style. But the more important issue, really, there are two of them. First, using crypto money to fund a war through anonymous donors. Is that the trend now? And then to create instability in another country, maybe. Then governments using their own money, with politicians getting some of that money back in the form of a payback, for example, crypto, obviously. Now, that is a very, very dangerous game on both fronts. Think about it. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. From Mikhail Tavli and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed
that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته, and welcome to the program for humanity. So we were looking at interest and the effects of interest on the person and on society. There are a few things left in this regard we would like to touch upon before we move on to a next topic. Now, amongst the devastating effects of interest and why Islam took a very harsh, strong stand against it, is because it destroys the connection between people. Because interest itself, the reality of it, it stemmed on using and abusing other people, or to be more precise, it is abusing the need of other people. When people finds himself in need of something and he needs to have money to buy it, and he doesn't have that money, then someone comes along and he says, how about I give you that money? But in return, you give me that much in return, that much percentage. And obviously these people have a need, so they are, you know, in a way or another, they say, okay, sure, fine. As long as I get what I want, then I don't mind. So the need of people becomes a means for those who give loans to use it against them. So that destroys and cuts the relationships between people. And it makes some of them, which is those who give loans, those who are money lenders on interest, they are the ones who start to get wealth without doing anything in return. So he just sits there and he just counts his interest as a profit. So therefore, interest itself becomes a stingy, greedy act. And it will obviously destroys the connection between people, and will open the doors of evil and everything that is, or all the evil acts, because people who are desperate, they will do whatever they have to do, and then they might, their desperation leads them to committing sins. And those who accumulate the wealth themselves, they'll be too happy that they made so much money that they will also misuse it to do sin. So in either way, it is bad in this regard. Also, what riba does, what interest does, it creates levels amongst people, right, in terms of status. Then you would have the wealth itself unevenly or unjustly or unfairly distributed amongst other people. So you will find levels of people. You'll find poor people. You'll find rich people. You find, as they call them, the classes, middle class, high class, low class. And then you would have a very high class who indulge themselves in interest, and the wealth becomes so big for them even to count. And in return, you will find a group of people, a class of people who will become extremely poor, and they become poorer and poorer by the day. So that's not a good thing, is it? And when that happens, people become poorer and poorer, and some get richer and richer, then you would have unemployment. You have people who are, those who are at least rich, they start to live a very luxurious life. They live a very push life. And then the common people are suffering because these guys decided to indulge themselves in interest. So some people work hard, they try to survive, they make money, and someone comes along and he takes it without even raising a finger. Maybe a finger just to sign the paper, but technically speaking, they just take everything from you. And you think that you have achieved something in return, but in fact, you haven't. Let us take a short break and then we will continue.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program for humanity. Now, we were talking about interest and how it is devastated to the community and to society and to the world as a whole. Because we said that when it comes to interest, the community are the one that will pay the price first and foremost, because it will make classes amongst them. It will make some of them richer, while a lot of others become poorer. And this is something that is against equality, against Islam, against all the hardcore beliefs of Islam that we need to be sure that we pay attention to. So we mentioned some of the devastating effects of riba when it comes to the person, on a person level, or on the level of society. Also, we have to keep in mind that the riba, the interest, it affects the people's faith as well. When people are put in hardships and people can't afford and they have to pay lots of loans, then what happens is that people's faith will weaken. They will say, look, why isn't Allah helping me? Why aren't I getting this? Why aren't I doing that? And the persons can't pay off the debts. And some people might even commit other crimes to make money, like stealing, like going around killing people. Like, I don't know. They will try to figure out a way that is forbidden just so they can do what? Pay off their interest. They pay off their loans. And especially if those who take loans, they have authority and they have power that they can unleash on those poor people. So it creates a huge, huge problem for people. And sometimes it might lead to even death, where a person can't, you know, pay off. And then these people send like gangsters or mafia on them or something on them. And I mean, even though this is, you know, in rare cases, but it is still nevertheless a devastating effect on the community. So it destroys the community in terms of politics, in terms of economy, in terms of personal life, in terms of everything. This problem and these problems will happen when people indulge in interest. So we have to make sure that we are nowhere next to making money from interest rates and trying to take the rights of other people. And it's enough for a person just to look at the hadith and write this in this regard and see why Islam has took this great, great stand against riba. Because at the end of the day, as a human beings, we need to help each other. We need to come to each other's help. We need to make it easier for one another, not to make it harder, not to make it almost impossible to live, not to make one another, live in hardship. I help you, you help me, we help each other, we have a happier world. Inshallah, we will leave it here and we will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل
صل على محمد وآله.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.